Well, I fooled you folks. Bet you thought I wasn't going to be here. And here I am. At least part of me is not here, though. My voice isn't working quite right, folks. I was laying in bed at home, as per the doctor's orders, listening to shortwave, and I just couldn't stand it. Boy, I was hearing so much BS and mashed potatoes and all that other stuff coming across the airways that I had to come do the show tonight. We'll say this, I heard some good things in Tom Valentine tonight, and that was a change for the better. But aside from that, Gene Miller and Carolyn were just about it for real good, truthful listening. I hope you all heard that earlier show. If you didn't, you should order the tape, because Gene Miller spent an hour. I didn't believe that I was going to be able to be here, and I really shouldn't, but I'm here. He spent an hour talking about gold and silver, platinum, all the various forms, the numismatic coins, bullion. He talked about what they call junk silver. He talked about all the different forms and why you should or should not invest in the various different kinds. In fact, he didn't say why you should or should not, but he gave the reasons why they were not good investments at certain times, and particularly right at this time. He also had some fantastic information directly from Wall Street. And if you're having trouble hearing my voice, I don't know what to do about that. I got the pot turned up just about as high as it'll go. So bear with me, folks, and we'll get through this evening. If my voice starts to peter out toward the end of the show, then we'll open the phones and let you talk for a while, or let Carolyn talk for a while, or somebody. So don't go away. Make sure you got pen and pencil by your side. I'll be right back after this short pause.
Gonna fall.
quote, "The constitutions of most of our states and of the United States assert that all power is inherent in the people, that they may exercise it by themselves, that it is their right and duty to be at all times armed," unquote. Thomas Jefferson said that. Ladies and gentlemen, if there's any question out there about what the purpose of the second article and amendment really is, it's to ensure that the power remains vested in the people of the United States of America, and that no government can become despotic or oppressive or become something that it was not intended to be, unless it is the will of the people. Conversely, Thomas Jefferson had another side to him. He was a member of the secret societies, Mystery Babylon. He, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, and many other of our founding fathers were. And, of course, I've been severely criticized for revealing that by all the little sheeple out there who believe blindly what they were taught in the first grade and just absolutely refuse to go and look. It doesn't mean they were bad men, ladies and gentlemen. It just means they were not who we thought they were. In fact, I think they were pretty good men for giving us the opportunity to prove or disprove the tenet that man could rule himself. For they are the ones responsible for finally, in all the history of this entire world, setting man truly free, when it penned from the mind, with the hand of man, the Constitution of the United States of America, and the first 10 amendments, so aptly called the Bill of Rights. Now, I have here a notification that the Jefferson Bible is once again available to the public and will confirm everything I've been telling you. This was written by Thomas Jefferson. It's Thomas Jefferson on the Gospels. He was not, as many of you believe, a Christian in the sense that you believe that he was a Christian. He believed that Christ was a great teacher, but was not, in fact, the Son of God. He separated himself from the established churches of his day. Jefferson, in fact, discarded both the Old Testament and the works of Paul. And he cut out from the Gospels the basic story and teachings of Jesus. And in an October 12, 1813 letter to John Adams, he said these were, quote, "as easily distinguished as diamonds in a dunghill," unquote. The Jefferson Bible has been long suppressed by those who want to promote the mistaken idea that the United States was formed as a Christian nation, and nothing could be farther from the truth. For our forefathers are responsible for creating a freedom of religion that had never existed in the world before. If this had been intended to be a Christian nation, they would have made the Christian church the state church of the United States of America. But they wrote into the Constitution a prohibition against Congress passing any legislation respecting any religion. Therefore, it left open to the people for the first time in history to choose their own God, their own altar, their own church, and for the first time in their history, they were free from persecution. However, they still had to maintain an aura of respectability in Christianity as they went about their business in the colonies. For most of the original settlers of the United States of America were, in fact, Christians. However, they had nothing to do with the penning of the Declaration of Independence, the authoring of the Constitution of the United States, or its adoption. Any mistaken idea that the Constitution is a contract between the government and the people don't know their history. It was a contract between a group of Freemasons and the government. The people really had absolutely nothing to do with it. So, my dear friends, on that note, I know many of you are fuming and steaming, and I can smell the smoke coming from between your eyebrows and out your ears. Nevertheless, In this program, you will get only the truth. Does it mean that you can't be a Christian or that Christianity is wrong? I myself am a Christian, but I'm not a stupid Christian, and I will not lead my life in a lie. The purpose of this show is to awaken people to the truth. We have lived in fantasy for most of our lives. I am as guilty as the rest. However, I am awake now, have been for some years, and don't intend to slip back into the fantasy. Remember, our purpose here is not to win a great audience or have great Nielsen ratings. They don't even have ratings for shortwave. We have to estimate the number of listeners by the number of pieces of mail that we get each week. It's not a popularity contest. And frankly, if I were kicked off the air tomorrow, it wouldn't bother me a bit. I'd find another way to go about my business just as I always have. And it will always be from a point of truth. I'd like to read a column to you that appeared where? Saginaw News, Saginaw, Michigan. Saginaw News on the 17th of January, 1994, by Rob Hirschman, guest columnist. And this is very good. And I quote from his column. May 1st, 1776 is a day that all freedom-loving people should hold in infamy. On this day, Adam Weishaupt of Germany, with the help of the Rothschild family, founded the Illuminati. The Illuminati is an organization committed to destroying individual liberty and traditional Christianity and establishing a world government based not on godly principles, but on money, greed, and power for the super elite. Let's take a look at the history of this country and see how the Illuminati and its front organizations have influenced events to bring about the mess we find our country in. You know, I'd like to comment that this is a very brave thing that this columnist is doing, for articles like this are forbidden in the establishment-controlled press. It's a wonder that this was ever printed. I continue. The first step by the Illuminati in a country that it wants to control is to take control of its currency. Rothschild once commented, "Permit me to control the money of a nation, and I care not who makes its laws." Many believe Lincoln was killed for refusing to borrow money from the international bankers and for refusing to let them create a national bank and print our currency. Booth and those who helped kill Lincoln were found to have the names of many prominent Washington insiders in their possession when they were caught. Through its persistence, the Illuminati finally got its way when in 1913 the Federal Reserve Act was passed. This established the Federal Reserve and gave it complete control of our currency and, in truth, control of our economy. And I'd like to say now that months ago when I did a show on the Federal Reserve, and I knew that this was wrong when I did it, but I don't know why I did it. I get the dates mixed up. I said that it was passed in 1910, and that's wrong, folks. So if you have that tape, put a little note on there that it's really 1913. In 1910, the meeting was held at Jekyll Island, which promulgated the passage of the Federal Reserve Act, and that's what I got confused in my mind. So I told you that I will always correct our mistakes on the air, and that's one that we know about right now. Okay, let me continue with this column. Did you know that the Federal Reserve is a privately owned bank run for profit and controlled by the big bankers like the Rockefellers and Rothschilds? Most people don't. Does it make any sense that we turn our currency over to these people for pennies on the dollar and they lend it back to us at full face value plus interest? Of course, what a sham. The Illuminati has established dozens of front groups in this country. The two most prominent are the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission. Some of the people who belong to one or both of these groups may shock you. They are Bill Clinton, George Bush, Al Gore, Alan Greenspan, Newt Gingrich, Henry Kissinger, David Gergen, Lloyd Benson, Paul Volcker, David Rockefeller, and William Buckley. Does this give you the feeling that those pushing the Illuminati's agenda have bought off both political parties? No wonder you can't tell the difference between the Republicans and Democrats anymore. both parties have sold their souls to the international bankers and their secret societies. Which vehicle do they intend to use to bring about world government? Well, the United Nations, of course. That is why they have been destroying our national sovereignty piece by piece and turning over more and more power to the United Nations. We have seen our nation deliberately run into the ground. Our industrial base is being systematically destroyed by design and will be completely destroyed by NAFTA and GATT. Our national debt has quadrupled in just 12 years and is now at a point that makes it impossible to repay. We have seen our Supreme Court stacked with godless individuals who ban any public mention of God, but okay things like abortion, special rights for homosexuals, and protection for pornographers. Our courts go along with things like gun control, even though they are clearly unconstitutional. For over 200 years in this country, private gun ownership was protected by the Constitution. Now, all of a sudden, we have misread the Constitution, and handguns are not covered anymore. And I guarantee you, they want our rifles next. Remember that a well-armed citizenry might resist being taken into the slavery of world government. Their plans of grandeur are not to be resisted by us common peasants. Please think about the following things. First, those promoting world government have control of the national media. Why do you think you never hear a word in the mainstream media about the Council on Foreign Relations or the Trilateral Commission? Second, did you know that shortly before his death, President John Kennedy gave a speech to college students about a conspiracy within the government that he was going to expose? Needless to say, he didn't live long enough to do so. And I don't think it is a coincidence that his brother Bobby was killed when it became obvious he was going to be elected president. I think they were afraid Bobby might go after those who killed his brother. You may think these things are far out, but please ask yourself one question. If we aren't being set up for a move into world government, how come virtually every top foreign policy office in our government has been held by a member of the Council on Foreign Relations or Trilateral Commission over the last 50 years? A coincidence? I hardly think so. Franklin Roosevelt once said, "Everything in politics and government happens because someone wants it to." And there are two views of history. One says things just happen. The other says things happen by master plan. I believe they are happening by plan. And if we don't act soon, it will be too late to do anything about it. I hope you will at least consider the possibility. About the writer, Rob Hirschman is vice president of Allen Supply, where he has worked for nearly 10 years. Excuse me. He and his wife, Mary Lou, have three children and live in Saginaw Township since 1980. He's worked on campaigns for both Republicans and Democrats. So, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it from even another source, this time in a mainstream newspaper in Saginaw, Michigan, which is extremely unusual, to say the least. To say the least. Excuse me again. Now I want to answer a few letters that I've received. I got several letters recently calling me to task for professing to be a Christian when at the same time I tell people not to believe anything that they can't prove. And that does seem to be at odds because the definition of religion is something that cannot be proved, must be taken as an article of faith. That's why it's a religion and not science, in case any of you have ever wondered about that. Well, I just happen to be one of those people, folks, who believe that man must have something or someone higher than himself. Must have. If man believes that he's at the top of any hierarchy, if he is the ultimate decider, if he is the ultimate power, then man becomes extremely dangerous to the world, to himself. I believe that there must be a God. I believe that there is a God. I take it based upon the order that I see in nature and in the universe that could not be a product of a chaotic happening by accident. For everything everything within the laws of nature and within the laws of the universe that make things work happen according to set rules. And I've never seen those rules ever violated, which means there is a source of supreme order that tells me that there is a God. When I look around at all the religions that I want to belong to or would like to belong to and begin to check them out and go to their sources, I find that every single religion existing upon the face of this earth has flaws, including Christianity. I find that all of them teach basically good things on the outside, but when you get behind the curtain and into the inside, that many of them, in fact, are working not for mankind, but for the power of a few. And actually intend through their own dogma, not mine, through their own dogma, and I've proven on this show many, many times again by reading their own words to you, they intend to seat Lucifer upon the throne of the world. It doesn't make any difference whether you or I believe in Lucifer or not. If they believe in Lucifer, then Lucifer is real. And if you don't understand that, then you better not ever listen to this program again, folks. Because you have to be able to understand that before you can understand anything else. It doesn't matter if you're an atheist. At the bottom of everything that's happening in the world today, propelling us into a one-world government, are religious events that happened thousands of years ago. It is based upon a lot of lies, a lot of deception, a lot of manipulations. It's based upon a lot of people who read a book and they don't like what it says, so they interpret it to mean what they want it to believe. You can go to any church or any religion on the face of this earth, and each and every single one of them will tell you that they are the only ones who hold the ultimate truth, who have the true God, who know the real facts, and they're all lying. So what I have done, folks, is I have gone directly to the words of Jesus Christ. I accept those words as good teachings. I accept the fact that anyone on this earth who could speak those words and take the punishment that Jesus Christ did must have had divinity, therefore must be exactly who he claims to be, and that there is a God who sent him here to straighten us out in some way, and we have taken his message and screwed it up and turned it around upside down and backwards so many times that nobody even knows what it is anymore, except a handful of people who go directly to his teachings and listen once again. Listen once again. I think if Jesus Christ were here and were walking this earth today, he would not approve of any organized religious group upon the face of this earth. I don't believe Buddha would approve of what his followers have done with his teachings. I don't believe that the Prophet Muhammad would be too happy with the followers of Islam. I don't believe God is happy with all the different sects and the divisions. And I'm going to tell you something right now. From the words of Jesus Christ, there is only one church. And that church does not exist under a steeple or on television. It exists where two or more of his followers meet, wherever they meet. People who truly understood what he taught. And even with all the human failings, at least try to live their life according to those teachings. And if everybody did that, the church would never have murdered millions of people in his name. And if we truly, truly cared about each other and lived by the moral code given to us, no one would ever have to fear, ever in their life, their neighbor, their government, or any foreign power. I believe it's absolutely necessary that man have a religion. I believe in the Constitution. I believe that it is anyone's choice what religion they have, and it's nobody else's business. Period. Nobody else's business. I accept my religion as an article of faith based upon the evidence of order that I see in the universe and the words attributed to Jesus Christ and to nothing else. And I do it because I know that I am a man and I have failings. And if I had never heard those teachings, if I had no moral code, if I had no religion, I myself, just like each and every one of you listening, might have become a despot of some kind, might have persecuted someone, somewhere, sometime. And in my early years, before I understood a lot of things about the world, I did. And I regret those things, sincerely. I regret going off to fight a war in Vietnam thinking I was serving my country and killing people. I regret that sincerely. I am now doing something that I think my God and Jesus and anybody else who has any moral conscience would approve of, and trying to awaken people to avoid a mass amount of bloodshed. And I think that is good. I will continue to do in my life whatever I believe to be good, whatever I believe to be what I should do, for the good of myself, my family, and this country, the people in this country. For I love you dearly. Dearly. No one who takes these risks could ever do this for any other reason. For folks, when you tell the truth, you are persecuted from every side, from every group, from every religion, from every organization, for every reason that you can imagine. You are lied about, and you are always poor. So I hope that answers all of the letters that I've been getting about that disparity. You see, realizing in my mind that man must have a moral code, and a moral code can only come from a religion. From nowhere else can it come. That each man must have a religion. It's the only thing that gives you courage to do what's right. For if you're afraid of dying, you will always be a coward. You will always look for protection from someone more powerful. And of course, if they give it to you, you become their puppet, their shoeshine boy, their ass kisser. You must not be afraid of dying. The only thing that can give you that release from that imprisonment, that fear, for it is a fear. Remember, man is always a prisoner of his own beliefs, no matter what they may be, including me and all of you. Set you free. For if you are doing what you know to be right, what you know to be good, if you are trying your very best to do what Jesus taught, and he didn't teach anyone ever to murder someone else because they were not a Christian, or because they were not the same color he was. In fact, he said this, and I want you all to listen to me very carefully, very, very carefully. Whomsoever believeth in me shall have everlasting life. He attached no strings to that. There were no conditions. You did not have to be white or black or purple or green. You did not have to be descended from the Israelites. You didn't have to live at the North Pole. And you don't have to wear a big hat or green shoes. It's very simple. Whomsoever believeth in me shall have everlasting life. And of course, there is the golden rule. You all remember the golden rule? Love thy neighbor as thyself. Those are truly the two basic tenets of Christianity, and they have been perverted. Most Christians, or most people, I should say, who profess to be Christians are not, never were. I hope that someday they will be. and their actions in twisting the words of Christ is what has really brought on the hatred of Christianity throughout the world. Don't go away. I'll be right back. Well, folks, if you listened to the earlier show, you really don't need to listen to these few words, because I'm sure that you were inspired enough by Gene Miller and Carolyn to call Gene tomorrow at Swiss Merit Trading and talk to him, or call tonight. It's best, actually, if you call tonight, because when he gets in, he'll get your message and call you right off the bat. They have a new newsletter chock full of information that you need to see. Everything that they have put out in written form is just fantastic. It's really good, always. Now, all you have to do to get it is call them, tell them that you're interested in protecting your assets against what's coming in the near future. We know that there's going to be some kind of economic shock. I have predicted for years a total economic collapse, and I stand behind that prediction. All of our economists in the Citizens Agency Joint Intelligence, all the people that we've talked to, that we've studied with, all of the evidence that we have points to it. Now, if you didn't hear the earlier broadcast, you should order the tape and then you should act upon it. But I want you, in any event, because you can get the whole thing over the phone talking directly with Gene or any of the other wonderful people at Swiss America Trading. So call 1-800-289-2646. Do it right now, folks. It's 1-800-289-2646. Thank them for sponsoring the Hour of the Time. Mention my name, Whitten Cooper. Ask for the new newsletter and all the written material that they can send you, as you're entitled to as a listener to the Hour of the Time. Now, you know how you can procrastinate, and you can see around you what's happening in the world and in this country. You know that the value of the dollar is shrinking on a daily basis. We picked this sponsor to help you. Just like we picked the food storage program, which nobody took advantage of. Well, we don't have to hang on to the food storage program, and we really don't have to hang on to a sponsor, because as long as we're doing right, I know that God will provide for this broadcast. But the people at Swiss America Trading are good, honest people. And as long as they are good, honest people and furnish a good, honest service for our listeners, as long as they want to stay with us, we will keep them as a sponsor. Call now, 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Do it now, folks. We'll be very glad that you did. Ladies and gentlemen, we bring you our TAGI report on tape from New Orleans.
Bill William Auer of THYNE Hoopa, Post Box, 1520, Solo, Arizona. This is Jeffrey Dykett, 812 West Monet, Apartment B, New Orleans. I just got your letter, but being blind, I can tell you there's two pages of stapled information that I can't get my hands on until I find some trustworthy readers, probably from my chapter of the local birch society, who will tell me what it is. At any rate, this cassette has some juicy tidbits, some of which concern your proclivity for unmasking the mystery religions of the nations, plus some vital information you need concerning your project to buy stock in communications companies. But first, let's get to the history part of it. Russell Sanjak, a former representative of NARIS, the National Association of Recording Arts and Sciences, and one of the foremost music people in this country, wrote a book before he died entitled American Popular Music from the Beginning to 1790, from 1790 to 1900, and from 1900 to the present. My concern will be in the first volume, from the beginning to 1790, where in Chapter 20, American Musical Theater, sorry, National Library Services for the Blind and Physically Handicapped does not record specific page numbers. Nevertheless, the following passage appears about theater in Charleston, South Carolina. I am reproducing this in full context so you can understand that some of your theories have been vindicated.
Charlestown's musical theater had started in January 1735 when Lewis Timothy's South Carolina Gazette recorded the first theatrical attraction since Tony Aston had entertained. A troupe of players, origin unknown, offered several evenings of entertainment, presenting on February 18th the first American performance on record of a ballad opera. Flora, or Hob in the Well, a London favorite usually known as Hob's Opera, was written by John Hipsley, a low comic who tailored the work to his own particular talents. The airs for this bawdy farce of deception and sexual intrigue were culled from Durfee's Wit and Mirth, Playford's Dancing Master, recently printed Scottish song collections, and some theater presentations. The following year, a new theater was built near the city's burying ground, and in it, Charlestown theatergoers saw for the first time in America the spectacle of a young woman clad in men's tight breeches. The production was George Farquhar's Recruiting Officer, with the popular song Over the Hills and Far Away, regularly sung as part of their ritual by American Masons, the first true patrons and financial supporters of the colonial theater and all music. Throughout the 18th century, the good relations between stage people, musicians, and the ancient and honorable society of Freemasons provided a marketplace for composers and songwriters, gave actors offstage recognition they had long been denied in England, and led to a social alliance with purveyors of popular entertainment. Masonic processions inevitably marched behind bands of musicians and actors who had been received into the secret order, enjoyed even greater income from special benefit performances as fellow Masons filled the house, having paraded there en masse. Local lodges made public appearances, regularly buying out the pit for a performance of some special play, enjoying an evening punctuated by onstage renditions of Masonic songs and instrumental music, as well as the declamation of prologues, odes, and epilogues honoring the fraternity. Such an audience usually included the most distinguished local citizens. From the moment the secret movement crossed the Atlantic in 1730, when the first lodge was established in Philadelphia, Freemasonry attracted the most prominent middle-class gentry and officials through its camaraderie, prestige, elaborate ceremony, and secret ritual. Franklin was a leading member and printed the first American Masonic book in 1734. Washington used a Masonic Bible at his first inauguration. Paul Revere was a major functionary at the Massachusetts Lodge. Masonic symbols, the truncated pyramid and fiery eye, which decorate the Great Seal of the Republic and the back of the dollar bill, bear testament to Masonry's influence among the Founding Fathers.
So much for those who would claim that you are talking out of hot air. Now, the last part of this juicy little tape, mainly a brief account of the connection between the New Orleans Mardi Gras and the socialist government of our city. The Mardi Gras was, in fact, started in 1851 when six gentlemen from Mobile, Alabama, they were Masons, formed a crew, K-R-E-W-E, called Comus, C-O-M-U-S. This crew established its first parade in 1857 on Mardi Gras night, featuring flambeaux and papier-mâché quotes. Its entire company, including the Lord of Mirth, notice I didn't call him a king, were all masked and remained under mask to this very day. The next crew to form and parade was in 1872 during Reconstruction. This was the crew of Rex, the King of Carnival, formed in honor of the Grand Duke Alexis, who was coming to the United States in search of his sweetheart, a local American actress whom he had seen in the play Bluebeard, or Bluebeard, I should say. The song from that play that she sang at the end of the second act became the national anthem of Carnival. It goes like this. In the room in the house in a quadrant, in the street in the lane on the road, turn to the left on the right hand, you'll see there my true love's abode. I go there glowing and cotton to my love like a turtle dove, and I swear upon my bended knees if ever I cease to love. May she take go on apple trees if ever I cease to love. May the moon be turned to green, green cheese if ever I cease to love. She can jump, she can play the piano, she can sing, she can dance, she can run. She can waltz, she can curtsy, she can bow, she's every girl rolled into one. I love my golden cutie, and I swear by stars above, may fish have legs and cows lay eggs if ever I cease to love, etc. Since that time, other Mardi Gras crews have formed, including the aforementioned Indian, Iris, or should we say Isis, Venus, Toth, Babylon, and, oh yes, the most blatantly Mason of the crews, it used to be called Mecca Hestia, but now is known as Sparta. What an ironic twist. To have a crew named after the first socialists in history, the Spartans. And by the way, they do have a traditional parade the first Saturday of the carnival season, which is 3 weeks before Mardi Gras. At any rate, you can tell from these goings-on how strong the Masonic influence is, especially when I found out in 1991 that Comus and Rex were an interlocking directory. I had suspected it for years because on the broadcast of the meeting of the two courts that occurs on Mardi Gras night, or used to occur on Mardi Gras night before 1992, the pages and the queens and ladies who were dancing in the meeting of the courts were named, and many of the names were the same. Then in 1991, the twin sisters of the Nolte family were co-queens of Rex and Comus. That literally blew it. The secret was out. The interlocking directorate was finally revealed. Many of the families, including the Duncans, the Ugiers, etc., had their literal identities unmasked. The very next year, Dorothy May Taylor, a left-wing extremist and member of the city council, and oh yes, NAACP, had her council pass a Mardi Gras ordinance that forced all crews to integrate, or else they couldn't use city facilities or parade in the streets. Comus ceased to exist as far as parades are concerned. Its place has now been taken by the Lords of Bohemia and a new crew, Orpheus, founded by District Attorney Harry Connick and his son, Harry Connick Jr. Nevertheless, Coleman still meets in a hotel, Mardi Gras night, although it doesn't parade, and it no longer interconnects with Rex. But Rex still parades, being the most politically sensitive crew, and, oh yes, it is integrated now. Well, with this kind of socialist influence, it's no wonder that the comprehensive zoning ordinance of the city of New Orleans can dictate where your business can go, what kind of property you can have, how it's supposed to be painted, etc. And especially in the French Quarter where I live, the Vieux Carré Commission can dictate all of those conditions and go farther than that. They can even tell you when you're going to play music or when you're not going to play music, etc. This is, of course, important to me as a jazz musician. No wonder the city is socialist in origin, and no wonder, although I ran for Congress in 1990, I didn't get very much support from the local people who basked in the security blanket given them by the city council, or shitty council, please, whose votes they control. But anyway, enough of that communist tidbit. We will now proceed to part three of this extravaganza, which is a report by CNBC's Dan Dorfman, a very significant market maven whose announcements have caused the rise and fall of stock on the stock market. Here is his suggestion as to what you should be trying to take over in terms of communications companies, especially in the light of the merger of Atlantic Bell and TCI, Telecommunications Inc., along with the merger of South Central Bell and Cox Cable, and the fight over Paramount, one of your targets, between QVC, the shopping network, and TCI and the Atlantic Bell Group.
Dan Dorfman has been keeping his ear to the ground for the sounds of the brave new world.
Paul Marsh of Bandwidth Securities, and he is beating the drums for Blockbuster. Before getting into that, let's look at some numbers. A receiver 50s with range, the close down 3/4. What's the business all about? It operates in franchises over 3,250 Blockbuster stores. It also owns a chain of musical stores. It has big stakes in a number of companies, among them 70% of Star Entertainment, a TV producer which recently acquired Republic Pictures, and also made a $600 million investment in Viacom International. Estimated 93 sales, $2 billion. Also noteworthy, a short position, a bet on lower prices, that is, 8.6 million shares. Now let's take a look at why Marsh is beating his drums for Blockbuster. We start off with key reason. Number one, pay-per-view no over. Marsh says it won't begin to make an impact until 1997, maybe not even until 2000, and by 2000 he says Blockbuster will be a different company. In any case, Marsh says video stores, a major profit center for studios, will still be the preferred over pay-per-view, since it will have the first crack at the newest films. In other words, it has the best bet there. Continuing on, a new Blockbuster look. Marsh says down the road, the company could be a program producer, maybe even produce films, they're just now for pay-per-view, and perhaps even buy out Stunt. In addition, the firm has giant cash flow, $1 billion in 3 years, $2 billion in 5 years, and that's money, of course, that can be used to buy assets. What do the earnings outlook look like? In fact, good earnings news is on the way, according to Marsh. The company will soon announce third quarter earnings, and Marsh says they should be better than expected. He's looking for, at this now, a gain of about 40%. What about past the third quarter? Big earnings growth down the road. Marsh is 30% a year over the next 5 years. His immediate numbers, $1.05 to $1.10 a share this year versus 76 last, on to 140 in 94 and 180 in 95. His 12-month target, lofty indeed, $35 a share. Now, a couple of caveats. Keep in mind, it's one man's opinion. Keep in mind also that when you're 8.6 million shares short, obviously, a lot of skeptics. So that's the Blockbuster Story. I'm Dan Dorfman.
CNBC. One little juicy tidbit before I finish this tape. In 1958, when Robert Welch founded the John Birch Society, he, a former president of the National Association of Manufacturers and a very rich Massachusetts candy maker, along with his nine other financier friends, found out that they had not the power or the finances to be able to take over the radio and television networks at that time, which is why the Birch Society established its own Western Islands publishing house, its magazine, then called the American Opinion and Review of the News, but which was later combined into the New American after they lost the Gertz case in the early 1980s, and their own series of reading rooms called American Opinion Bookstores. Now, if those people at that time had trouble in trying to take over a major news outlet, then I would say that the chances of your being able to do so today are very slim indeed, I am sorry to say. Nevertheless, it must be tried again.
And we are trying it again, folks, and that was our report from New Orleans, our Kedgy report from New Orleans on tape. The loud clicks and things you heard are the way that he edits his copy. See, we write on paper, on a typewriter, on a computer, and we backspace and we type over. He's writing with his voice on a tape because he cannot see. And so he edits the tape by going back and erasing and then talking over. So that is why you heard the clicks and what sounded like disconnected tape there. It was. Well, once again, we've proven that voice or not, at least not normal voice or not, the hour of the time is the best, the very best radio that there is. It is the last and only bastion of free speech left in the world. Bar none, ladies and gentlemen, bar none at all. We sometimes make mistakes, but when we do it, there are mistakes. Never, never do we tell you anything intentionally that is not true. As soon as we discover a mistake, we always correct it. And our standard admonition pertains at all times, during every single program, no matter what the subject. You are not to believe anything that I say, or that Carolyn says, or that Dan Rather says, or Ted Koppel, or the President of the United States, or even your own mother, unless you can prove it in your own research. If you ever find good, solid evidence that we are absolutely wrong, please notify us immediately. Send us the evidence. If we agree that it has been proven, we will come on the air. And we will straighten out whatever it was that we said that turned out not to be true. In the meantime, understand that we have an agenda. Our agenda is to wake the sheeple, empower the people, and save freedom for the world. Whatever it takes, as long as it takes, no matter the consequences, and no matter who it helps or hurts, even if it hurts me. I think we've got time for maybe two phone calls if there's somebody out there that wants to call. The number is 602-333-2174. That's 602-333-2174. And actually, that may be only room for about one phone call. The number is 602-333-2174. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Bart from L.A.
Hello, Bart. How are you?
We're okay after the little quake here.
Yes, I was thinking about you guys and a lot of other people. You know, Annie and I lived there for a long time, and we have an awful lot of friends there, and there are a lot of people turning up hurt, but we have wisely refrained from attempting to call anyone because we don't want to be part of the problem by tying up the phone lines. Can you give us a quick report on how things really are there?
A majority of the freeways have been damaged. There's a lot of structural damage up in the San Fernando Valley area of northern Los Angeles. The thing I'm called in to point out is that the mayor of Los Angeles, Reardon, along with the Governor Pete Wilson and Bill Clinton, they've all gotten together and they've declared a state of emergency here in the state of California. And FEMA has been activated, and they're having representatives from FEMA come down to talk with the mayor of Los Angeles to sort things out and get some relief help. And Clinton has pledged federal assistance to the state. And I thought that would be something to bring up, that FEMA is coming in here.
If you see any evidence of house-to-house searches, would you notify us right away, Bart?
Oh, we sure would.
You have my home phone number, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that report. What does it look like for a number of people who are actually injured or killed?
They said so far 27 dead. 15 of those were within one apartment complex that collapsed.
Uh-huh.
And 5 by heart attack and a few others. There's apparently 15,000 homeless, 600,000 without electricity, and about 200,000 without water.
How many injured?
They have a lot of different figures, but it looks about in the tens of thousands.
Tens of thousand injuries?
But it's not, those are like minor injuries, but really, I don't think it's that great, judging from being here in L.A.
Okay. Well, you are in all of our prayers, and we certainly hope that we're happy to hear that you weren't injured, and I take it that Mark is okay?
Yes, he's okay as well.
Great. And I would like to say to all the listeners out there, please refrain from calling your loved ones in Los Angeles, no matter how much you feel that that you're worried about them, because when you do, they have a lot of power outages, they have a lot of phone lines down, and if you tie up the only circuits that are available, you could actually hinder rescue and firefighting and the attempts to help all those people and get things restored back to normal. So please refrain from calling the Los Angeles San Fernando Valley area. Thank you very much, Bart, for your call.
Thank you, Bill.
Good night. That's it, folks. We don't have any more time. And as usual, good night. And God bless each and every single one of you.